Before Pam's sermon, I have a reading for you from the poet Rumi, the 13th century mystic. The name is An Awkward Companion. This physical world has no two things alike. Every comparison is awkwardly rough. You can put a lion next to a man, but the placing is hazardous to both. Say the body is like this lamp. It has to have a wick and oil, sleep and food. If it doesn't get those, it will die. And it is always burning those up, trying to die. But where is the sun in this comparison? It rises, and the lamp's light mixes with the day. Oneness, which is the reality, cannot be understood with lamp and sun images. The blurring of a plural into a unity is wrong. No image can describe what our fathers and mothers, our grandfathers and grandmothers remains. Language does not touch the one who lives in each of us.
We're going to share silence for about 6 deep breaths before I begin speaking. Unitarian Universalist minister Forrest Church has written, "When people tell me proudly that they don't believe in God, I ask them to tell me a little bit about the God they don't believe in, for I probably don't believe in him either." So let me tell you a little bit about the God I don't believe in. When I was a child, my grandmother was really fun to play with. She dressed up in costumes with me, and she brought me picture books. Her house smelled of coffee and bacon. Her Bible was swaddled in a worn book cover knitted from black and purple yarn with silver threads. From the beginning, she took it upon herself to get me saved. When I was old enough to read, she gave me a little pouch of Bible verses on cards to memorize. She saw to it that I attended vacation Bible school in the summer. She described how misdeeds and unbelief are punished in hell. And she warned that Satan tempts and tricks us at every turn. My beloved grandmother assured me that God was watching everything I did, everywhere I went, day and night. I did not find this comforting. I imagined God following me into the bathroom, seeing me undressed, watching me as I slept, and reading my thoughts. I wondered if there was anywhere I could be safe from God's prying eyes and his judgment, like a shelter, like maybe in a car because it's made of metal. Maybe he couldn't see through that. I stopped believing in it long ago, but this image of a judgmental, intrusive, authoritarian God lives on, obviously, in my memory, and I know it plays a role in my spiritual life. Let's take a moment to remind ourselves that Unitarian Universalists hold many beliefs about the place of humankind in the universe, about the afterlife, if any, about revelation, God, and everything else. Also, different traditions have very different ideas about divine beings. Some believe in multiple faces of God or multiple deities. Others, such as Islam, imagine God without any face at all. I make no conscious assumptions about the backgrounds of people here today. My own heritage is white Anglo-Protestant, which happens to be the dominant tradition among Unitarian Universalists, as well as of United States culture in general. The image of God I hold, the God I don't believe in, derives from this upbringing. The problem is, in simply rejecting negative models and patterns from the past about God or anything else, we risk calling forth their shadow or mirror images. And if we just focus on the question of belief, we lose opportunities to explore the religious images and mythologies that shape our culture and our worldview. So here's what I propose. Instead of focusing on a negative image of the God we don't believe in, we can decide together to seek and cultivate images of the divine that align with our personal values and our Unitarian Universalist principles. Exploring our notions about God potentially contributes to our spiritual growth as individuals. Theological reflection is part of our collective free and responsible search for truth and meaning. What guidance might we find looking at our Unitarian Universalist heritage? The first of our seven principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, corresponds theologically with the concept of imago Dei, the image of God. In the biblical story of creation, we read that God said, "Let us make humankind in our image." Our Unitarian ancestors, walking in the footsteps of ancient theologians, taught that every human being bears the image of God. For example, in the first half of the 19th century, William Ellery Channing recognized the divine in our capacity for intelligence, love, and conscience. He wrote, "The divine attributes are first developed in ourselves and thence transferred to our Creator. The idea of God, sublime and awful as it is the idea of our own spiritual nature, purified and enlarged to infinity. In ourselves are the elements of the divinity." End of quote. It requires self-awareness and great mental discipline to avoid thinking of God as just like a human being with superior powers. But if we steer clear of this pitfall, the moral implications of Imago Dei can offer valuable guidance. Channing's theology led him to preach the abolition of slavery. And he promoted self-improvement as a religious duty, We celebrate this notion when we sing "This Little Light of Mine." We can also look to the sixth and seventh principles as guides. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. These principles focus on the values of relationship, interconnectedness, and community. So, what images of God convey these values? How does a concept of the divine inform our sense of being a part of something greater than ourselves? If we think of God as a spirit of community, then what images of community align with our Unitarian Universalist ideals? So I have a few examples to share with you. Charlotte Perkins Gilman, a feminist author of the early 20th century, wrote a study entitled His Religion and Hers. She speculated about how female leadership might improve the lot of humankind. Men are hunters and warriors. Their religion focuses on death and the afterlife. The gods are competitive and warlike. According to Gilman, in contrast, women's worldview is forward-looking, concerned with birth and the raising of children. Listen to this striking vision from Gilman's study, and she's citing H.G. Wells here, paraphrasing. Suppose the wisest men in the world were gathered together in a great hall to decide on what was most needed for the benefit of humans. And suppose that into that hall came pouring through a chute babies at the rate of 30 a minute. Would anything be discussed there except what to do with the babies? End of quote. What sort of God is implied by the conjuring of loving arms to catch all the babies? This extraordinary scenario is not actually very different from the reality. Babies pouring through a chute into our midst every 2 seconds. It is a reality with significant implications for leadership. Statistics of global net population growth may or may not touch our hearts, but how might we imagine the role and image of the divine in a setting where newborn babies pour through a chute without interruption into our own loving arms? Here's another suggestion to entertain. I once heard a Muslim imam preach that God is the center toward which people approach in their efforts to live a good life. Some reach closer to the center while others struggle from farther out. The imam, leader of the Friday prayer service at the mosque, contrasted this with a dualistic worldview that divides people into sheep and goats, good and evil. I rather like the image of all people facing toward a single point, a center of value and power that commands our energy, our love, and our loyalty. When Muslims pray, they bow toward Mecca, physically enacting their unity. Suppose instead of the Kaaba at Mecca, we think of the center as a model world community transformed by love and justice. Suppose we allow ourselves to be inspired together by this powerful vision of cooperation and harmony. So a third example comes from the Reverend Mr. Rogers, who, as you may know, was an ordained Presbyterian minister. He was talking to children about tragic events. A video of him speaking about this was posted after this Sandy Hook school shooting. He was saying, "When I was a boy and would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people helping.' To this day, especially in times of disaster, I remember my mother's words, and I am always comforted by realizing that there are still so many helpers, so many caring people in this world." End of quote. So think of a neighbor bringing a plate of brownies to a bereaved family, a volunteer delivering books to a housebound elder, a rescue team searching through the night for a lost child. To say God is love suggests deeds. Compassion is true north, a center of value and power that shines forth in acts of generosity and kindness. We could do worse than be guided by images of friendly faces, expressions of concern, and loving care. So I invite you now to set aside for a moment what you believe about God, conclusions that you have reached in your mature, rational, religious exploration. Instead, just think for a moment about the images of God that populate your mind and your dream landscape. When I asked my husband about this, he talked about Geppetto in the belly of the whale in the movie about Pinocchio, and he thought this might make Walt Disney an image of God. If you're willing, call up pictures and stories, images and conversations that made some kind of impression on you, positive or negative. Maybe you have an early memory of a Sunday school lesson or a vacation Bible school activity, a frightening dream, or an exhilarating encounter with mystery. How do these images continue to affect you? The more emotionally charged they are, the more important it is to be aware of them. I'll let you think about that while I clear my throat. Experience and brain science tell us that images and stories bypass the rational process. They influence our attitudes and decisions and actions much more than we might realize. They influence us often much more than we would like. Without dwelling on the question of belief, we know that myths and images do help shape our worldview. We need to pay attention to the images and stories we live by. What concepts of God animate our moral imagination? What images might call us to our highest aspirations, to our greatest fulfillment, to our whole and authentic selves? What images strengthen us in hope, patience, and love? We needn't decide on just one, and we needn't agree with one another. But I'll warrant that the images that attract and inspire us the most as a community resonate with the principles and values we share. I close with these words by UU minister and poet Nancy Schaefer. It's a poem called "That Which Holds All." Because she wanted everyone to feel included in her prayer, she said right at the beginning several names for the holy. Spirit, she said. Holy One. Mystery. God. But then thinking, these weren't enough ways of addressing that which cannot be fully addressed, she added particularity, saying, Spirit of life, Spirit of love, ancient Holy One. Mystery we will not ever fully know. Gracious God, and also Spirit of this earth. God of Sarah, Gaia, Thou. And then, tongue loosened, she fell to naming superlatives as well. Most creative one, greatest source, closest hope. Even though superlatives for the sacred seemed to her probably redundant, but then she couldn't stop. One who made the stars, she said, although she knew technically a number of those present didn't believe the stars had been made by anyone or thing, but just luckily happened. One who is an entire ocean of compassion, she said. No one laughed. That which has been present since before the beginning, she said. The room was silent. Then, although she hadn't imagined it this way, others began to offer names. Peace, said one. One my mother knew, said another. Ancestor, said a third. Wind. Rain. Breath, said one near the back. Refuge. That which holds all. A child said, water. Someone said, Kuan Yin. Then, womb. Witness. Great kindness. Great eagle. Eternal stillness. And then, there wasn't any need to say the things she thought would be important to say, and everyone sat hushed until someone said, Amen.